Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am the one, I think the only, Matt Koplik.
And I am
easily
replaced by any homosexual Matt can grab on the street and get to do this podcast, John Wiscavit.
I haven't thought about it.
Any Hell's Kitchen, I mean, it's honestly just like a Russian roulette wheel of like Hell's Kitchen gays. Just spin. Oh, there she is.
Yeah,
she is a BFA and a seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, John took it a little personally when I dragged him through the mud in last week's episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was just funny that, like, you wait until I'm not there to be funny, and... Wig snatched. He's in a rolly... Matt's in a rolly chair right now, and I thought he was gonna just run into the wall.
I was. I'm giving you full Barbra Streisand, and I can get it for you wholesale realness. And if you get that joke, congratulations.
If you get that joke, you're not me.
No, you're not, John. It's fine. Whatever.
But that's our dynamic. Welcome back.
Welcome back, John. I'm so happy to have you. I look forward to more episodes without you.
I know. Everyone does. No, Morgan is such a great replacement me. He definitely is my Emily Skinner to the Linda Etter when I'm sick. Mm. And Jekyll and Hyde. Just the offstage voice singing and covering my Someone Like You's. And... honestly, better actress, better singer. I mean, I'm Linda Etter. You know, I'm a staple.
There are worse things to be than Linda Etter. Let me tell you,
it's true. I love her. But no, you guys, it was such a fun episode. Thank you for
thank you,
thank you for that.
You're welcome. It was all for you. I mean, I think we are. There will be more. My obsessions coming up because
yes.
John is yet again booked and blessed.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it rains, it pours. And so I'm going to take... Oh, yeah. So I want this edited in and also keep my voice in. I want me to explain to everyone how I direct you in editing.
I fucking hate you.
I want like, really sad violins to start playing. Right now.
Yeah, no, they're going to play right now.
Right now.
They're happening.
And then I want... yeah, I want kind of things to just, like, maybe, like, a Shonda Rhimes kind of, like, back into the scene, kind of, like, joom, like, sound effect, like, or dropped in. So, yeah, like, when it rains, it pours, you know, I'm, like, starting rehearsals for an off-Broadway show, which I'm excited about. Mm. But, like, it's been, like, a crazy couple weeks here. And, like, one of the reasons why I've been away is because Matt and I are getting a divorce. No. Matt, are you okay?
I'm saving and recording. I don't want the great crash of 2019 again.
Clever girl.
So I keep going back and forth.
Clever girl.
But I did laugh earlier at that divorce joke, but I don't think my mic recorded it because I was saving.
Well,
sorry.
Now everyone just thinks I'm not funny. Just kidding.
I mean, are we really going to open up that wound? Okay.
But so basically, you know, I've been going through some health stuff. And then right before my 31st birthday, as if that isn't torture enough, turning 31, am I right? I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. Wah, wah.
Boom.
Boom. Boop. Bloop. All the shoops. yeah, so it's like, it's, you know, I'm doing well. I'm on the road to recovery. I had to have surgery. I am really proud to be the face of testicular cancer. I'm proud that I now get to get my own, like, I'm getting my own Livestrong bracelets printed, but instead of Livestrong, it's, I don't know, like,
live torturously.
I was gonna say, like, what's my catchphrase?
Yours is
like,
live long and torturously. That's your,
yeah, or like, honestly, like, make mistakes. Like, that, live just strong minus make mistakes.
Yeah. I also like to say, so this is me and John's dynamic. I was at all my son's because I don't know if I mentioned it on the pod before. I was making a point to see every single Tony nominee, so I went to go see all my sons, and I texted John the day before about bringing Morgan on to do an episode. I was like, you know, he's your friend. I'd really love to have you on there as well. And then the next day during intermission, John texts me a GIF. Is it, did we say GIF or GIF?
It's GIF. Yeah. Right.
Sends me a GIF of Lisa Kudrow as Valerie Cherish saying, well, I got it, with the pretext of it saying, me telling everyone I love that I have testicular cancer.
Listen.
And I wrote back, you bastard. And then to make him feel a little better, I said, if it makes you feel any better, I'm currently at all my sons right now and your news is less depressing.
I mean, it is. It truly
That's
is.
That's who we are. So, like, John not only took my request about Morgan and turned it about himself.
Yes.
He then took my day of theater and turned it about himself.
And that, well, that also, that's on the other side of my bracelet. Make it about John.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of like WWJD, it's like, how can I turn this about John? I don't
know. All the live John day.
Exactly. But so I mean, here's the thing. I've been doing this my way. I threw myself a 31 going away birthday ball.
Yes,
where
you did.
We went and threw axes because I wanted to throw sharp objects at shit.
I don't think I've ever been more stressed out at a birthday.
It was amazing seeing Matt throw axes. Let me just tell you, I was not good at throwing axes. You had some really good moments.
I did. Well, so it turns out that the wood that we were throwing it at was too new for it to stick.
Yeah. Our team was given a bit of a resurrection. What's the right word? We were given a, We were told that basically midway through, we were like, oh, you guys have been playing an unfair game.
Yeah,
so good job for what you've done.
Because nobody in our team was able to make this axe stick. And finally, like halfway through the game, the dude who was running it was like, let me check this wood for a second.
Yeah.
So we figured it out. And then John got some hits. I got a few good ones. I was mostly only stressed out when you were holding the axe, though.
Yeah, no, that was really fun. Yeah, I've been telling people that I've had it by sending them Valerie Cherish GIFs. I've been throwing birthday balls. You know, it's
you don't have any more balls really left to throw.
I don't, although Stephanie Maloney, a good friend of mine, did give me a stuffed testicle, and I like a really cute, adorable stuffed animal testicle, and it's my new favorite thing.
Yeah.
Let me just be completely transparent. Like, the amount of attention I've been getting is why I do what I do anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you have the chance to go out there and get cancer, do not let opportunity pass you.
You put the dope in dopamine hit.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. Mm-hmm. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
Honestly, all my joking asshole things aside, go to doctors, you know?
Yeah. I need to do that myself.
Go to doctors. You only get one chance to live. Live your life to the fullest. And go see A Strange Loop at Playwrights Horizons. I'm going to quickly segue into our first topic. I saw it yesterday. The composer and lyricist and book writer Michael R. Jackson writes, or, you know, he had to put the R because of obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons.
But yeah. Michael Jackson has proved himself to be a force to be reckoned with. I laughed. I screamed. Mm. I truly found myself screaming at multiple moments. I was sitting between a 90-year-old frail woman who, like, couldn't even find the energy to sit up. Like, you know, just like a normal, typical audience, a white woman. Mm. And then, like, this big, like, muscular, crazy zaddy bear next to me. And I will say, all three of us had a laugh riot. It is about... Do you know anything about it?
No. I feel like I do, but I'm not going to say it out loud because I could be totally wrong.
You kind of do, but you really don't because... So it's about this theory about... I can't remember the exact theory, but it's about one's own consciousness. Mm-hmm. And about how we just kind of, like, our own perception of ourselves are just these never-ending loops of just kind of, like... like screenshots or lies or representations of ourselves, like our own identity is just this never-ending loop. Mm-hmm. And the creator of it calls it, you know, a very strange loop, and so that's where the title comes from. But the show in and of itself is a really strange loop. It's a musical about a character whose name is Usher. Mm-hmm. So, like the singer Usher, yeah. He's always being compared, but he's working as an usher at the Lion King on Broadway, which is what Michael Jackson did.
Yeah.
And it's about him writing a musical, The Strange Loop, writing it. So it's this whole thing that's inside itself, but, like, it's so... The cast is amazing. The actor who plays Usher, Larry Owens, who is phenomenal, mm-hmm. and then his six thoughts. And so it's like, oh, my daily self-loathing, my faggotry. You know, it's all about being queer, black, overweight, in this day and age, battling with the sense that he wants to be a white girl, you know, a white pop star. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we look and we idolize these Taylor Swifts. What is Taylor Swift really bringing to the table?
Sure.
But we still idolize them, and it's so brilliant. It's so scream out loud funny. I laughed, I cried. I have not seen an audience just, like, leap to their feet like mm-hmm. that. I mean, like, it's amazing. I highly recommend it.
I very much would like to see it. I became aware of Michael R. Jackson through Natalie Walker, who mm-hmm. was on the show and championed him.
Because she talked about teeth,
yeah,
right?
His, how yes. he co-wrote Teeth. And then I actually have known Larry Owens for over a decade now. We haven't, like, hung out in many, many, many years. But even when we were teenagers, I was like, who are you? You are such a phenomenal talent and, like, an interesting
yeah.
personality. So I would very much like to see it. I think he's very special, and I think Michael R. Jackson's very special, so I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wanted to treat myself because I have been I've been bedridden. I've caught up on so much TV. Yeah. I only have one episode left of Fosse Verdon. I love it. How did you end the series? Did you like it?
No, I didn't.
I've loved it.
I mean, people have loved it. And I'm not going to, like, begrudge people for loving it. My issue for it was more the fact that I thought it was... I just got, like, a very icky vibe from the mentality of it, which was that it sort of felt like Nicole Fosse wanted them to give her mother her due, which obviously, like, she deserves it, but then also, like, take down her father, and that just sort of felt like a weirdly personal thing to me that I didn't enjoy. I found it very biased and one-sided is basically what I'm trying to say, and I have no issue with, like, exposing some of the darker underbelly stuff, but I found it very one-sided in that respect, and that just made me kind of go, don't shortchange me. Like, I can take more complex shit than this right now.
Oh, see, I find it quite complex because I've found, especially in this, I'm in the second to last episode, and I mean, she's kind of switched herself to be the villain. And kind of, you know, I mean, Michelle Williams.
I think the acting on the show is really fantastic. And I do, I can't stress this enough. I do think that actually all of Gwen Verdon's writing is great. Yes. It's literally everyone else's writing that I think suffers. And I found that to be, that's where I found the bias to be.
I will agree with some of that too. Yeah. And I will also say that whatever happened with Nicole Fosse's grow up wig trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
It's,
I mean, I mean, I'm watching this during Pride Month. Think yeah. about my pride.
Yeah. Like it's, how dare you fuck up a wig during Pride?
It's an attack on the gay people.
Yeah.
Not since Pence.
Not, oh
not since Pence has there been just God awful. Also, I will say, sorry, I've just watched so many things this week. You need to watch Fleabag.
I was about to say, I did. I absolutely watched Fleabag. I binged watched it.
Me too.
Also, I watched all of it in like 2 days. And then I took two
It's only
off.
12 episodes.
It's only 12 episodes, yeah. And they're each like 25 minutes, so you can watch it in literally less than half of a day. And yes. you should. You absolutely should. Ugh. It's what got me into Killing Eve, because I...
And where... Oh, where... Have you finished it yet?
I finished the first season, and I'm halfway through season two.
Wait, is Killing Eve already has two seasons?
Yeah. They, well, so here's the deal. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who created Killing Eve...
Is my new god.
Same. Created Killing Eve. She created and starred in Fleabag.
Right.
And she's now actually doing script doctoring for the new James Bond movie, because Daniel Craig, like, Daniel Craig personally asked for her to come onto the movie to give it humor and give it some more feminist perspective, which I was like, great. Like, that's the kind of awareness we need
yes.
for people in power.
Because we've been sitting watching Killing Eve, which is also amazing. We're halfway through, just being like, there is no way that a man wrote female characters this complex in these novellas. No. This has mm-mm. to all be Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Like, well, how far into it are you? Did you finish season one?
No.
Okay.
We just got to the episode. I don't want to spoil anything, but we're in the part of the series where their lives start, where they start meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
And you're just like,
The entire first season is fantastic.
Yeah.
You can tell when Phoebe Waller-Bridge wrote an episode.
Mm-hmm.
There is a very specific, you know, attitude about it. She stops writing for it, though, for the second season. She just becomes an executive producer. And it's still very good,
mm-hmm.
but something is lost. And yeah. it's still very watchable. It's still very entertaining. It's still very complex. But something is different. What I love about it,
amazing.
and she talks about it I think it's the... It was a BBC podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I've been also listening to a bunch of podcasts lately because I'm just like trying to get in my older years. I'm trying to listen to people who I respect who are different from me's perspectives on life and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm sure what the people listen to this for, right?
I mean, I'm hoping. I personally just record this because I have literally nothing else to offer the world. And I record as often as I can to distract myself from how sad that is. Moving on to Killing Eve.
Man, I have cancer. You can't be...
You don't have cancer anymore!
I do.
No, I know you do. But it's, I wanted to
my
joke.
Whole life is cancer. Sorry.
John, you are a cancer. We can make these jokes. You can't.
I'm just imagining every audience... Well, our, like, three listeners just listening to this being like, oh...
Well,
and just hitting, like, stop and being like, I'm done with
it. We'll see. But she said on a podcast, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she said that, her way into everything is comedy. She's
yes.
like, I'm not a dramatic writer. Like, I can't write a good dramatic scene truly to save
Lies.
My life. Well, and to be fair, every scene she writes, there is always humor to it.
Correct.
But because she is so intelligent and insightful, there is pathos to that humor. So we
yes.
laugh because we get it, but we then cry because we get it, which
yes.
is the brilliance of her. She's like, I couldn't write a traditional Grey's Anatomy episode. Like, I can't.
Ugh,
she's like, I
we
can't
don't
just
want
do,
her to.
No, she's like, I can't do that kind of ho-hum stuff all the live long day. And that is sort of what makes Killing Eve so special, is that she finds the humorous insight into situations like this.
To the most fucked up shit. It's amazing.
It's great. It's so good. The first season of Killing Eve is fantastic. No, we're good. The second season of Fleabag, I rewatched it again like 2 days later, and I had to stop myself because I got too paralyzed. As someone who's trying to write more, I could not write after I'd watched Fleabag. I'd just sit there and go, I can't touch that. And so I had to put it away, and I'm forcing myself not to watch it again, which is really hard because it's like fucking crack. I'm forcing myself to finish at least one of my three projects right now, and then when I finish it, my reward is that I will rewatch Fleabag.
Yeah, the second season was one of those things where I watched and I thought, I'm absolute shit.
Mm-hmm.
You just storytelling and comedy and concepts and the brilliance and just the things interweaved in that season. You just stop listening to this. What are you doing listening to this? Go watch Fleabag.
Just go watch Fleabag. I'm pretty sure Morgan and I talked about it for a hot second last time. If we did, I probably cut it. I cut a lot.
I was on Vicodin.
Yes, you were on Vicodin. But either way, I'm just saying, like, sorry to repeat myself. If I am, just fucking watch Fleabag.
Oh, you look fantastic.
Oh, well, you both look gorgeous.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Is that fur?
Yes, but it's okay because it had a stroke.
Oh, oh lovely.
So we got a new iTunes review.
Oh, boy.
5 stars. I screenshotted it, but I don't think my phone would let me see the entire headline. So it says, my new favorite musical theater, .. I'm going to assume it says my new favorite musical theater podcast.
It's porn.
Yeah, and not you know, my new favorite musical theater, torture. I don't know.
Torture porn.
Torture porn, yeah.
It's torture,
yeah.
It's torture porn.
So cue Light in the Piazza Overture. No, I'm going to actually play it, you asswipe. Cue Light in the Piazza Overture. My new favorite musical theater, .. Musical theater is full of iconic pairs, be it Annie and Sandy, Tony and Maria, Bakers and their wives, or Madame Morribles and speaking the beginning of The Wizard and I.
Who are these BMI writers?
I am obsessed. We can now add to this pantheon Matt Koplik, who first came into my life through his web series Baking It on Broadway, shout out, and John Wiscavige, whose body of work I was already familiar with, and by body of work, I mean his Twitter. His body yaddy yaddy of Twitter. You are the twit of Twitter.
I am.
There seems to be a third host, but she only comes on every once in a while to completely disagree with whatever they have just said, and also call them Billy? This podcast is a must-listen for anyone who enjoys getting the latest on the Great White Way, hard-hitting investigative journalism of foot fetishists. Throwback. A good double entendre. Mediocre double entendres, let's be honest. And just two mediocre people who are genuinely fun to listen to. A new episode is always the highlight of my week, if there's a new episode that week. Be it a jukebox, that musical, my obsession, or just plain old cussing and discussing. This show will charm the husk right off of your corn, fill each little bird full of springs. That's a Disneyland reference. Make June bust out, ding dong ding your trolley, ding 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 your trolley, and even do a little Bernadette Peter vibrato shimmy. Listen, folks, I really take it to heart when I ask for gay reviews, 5-star gay reviews. That was a full-on 5-star gay review.
Yeah, people are showing up more than we do for this goddamn podcast to write these reviews.
And all I have to say, all I have to say to it is, blah, blah,
so now it's time for the
Tony.
Tony, get over here.
What does Tony stand for? Antoinette Perry Award. Deodoro, Antoinette Perry Award.
When I did West Side Story in high school and played Doc, one time the Maria
when
fucked
you
up.
When you made out with the Tony, right?
Yeah, my first gay kiss, yeah, at the Mambo.
Gay kiss. Sorry, I went for PG, you went for R. I apologize.
Yeah, that's how it's going to go.
Sorry, everybody.
But yeah, no, she fucked up the line one day and she said, Anton, what does Anton stand for? And we're like, bitch,
you know already. You
so
said.
Anyways, the Tonys.
The Tonys. Yes, but we are recording this on Monday, June 10th. The Tonys were on a Sunday, June 9th.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. Let's just, like, get into it. Overall
Ben Platt stole my jokes.
He stole all of your jokes. I really enjoyed... There was that bit that James Corden was like, theater people are just too polite to each other. That's why our ratings are so low. Like, we need some drama. He goes, let's all get drama in here. Yeah. I really liked that bit.
And
Rachel Brosnahan were like, you bumped into me at Joe Allen's. What's up? And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. That was an accident.
Also,
I'm so sorry about that then.
Who knew she was blonde? Not me.
Well, now that she's blonde, she's just Evan Rachel Wood.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, non-equity Evan Rachel Wood. And then
she's now Emmy winner Evan. She's actually the better version of Evan Rachel Wood now because she has an Emmy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought the same exact thing. I was like, wow, Evan looks. I always fuck up her name. Evan looks good, and then I was like, oh my God, that's Rachel Brosnahan.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, wig snatched.
Wait, total wig snatch.
Audra, I like that segment.
And then Audra and Laura Linney's Linney. Beef. That was great. And Audra,
I want that to be the next FX theory. Linney McDonald.
Yeah, Linney McDonald. Or feud Linney McDonald.
Yeah, exactly.
Audra McDonald taking out her earrings or pretending to take out her earrings because she never actually took them out.
Well, and like, I don't know if you saw, but she retweeted me yesterday and said, okay, this made me laugh. And so she's now my best friend.
She is your best friend. What was the tweet, John, so everyone can find it?
I don't remember.
It was a Tony reference.
It was a Tony reference. Yeah. I made a joke about her, and she was like, "LOL, this made me laugh." And I was like, "LOL, can I be you?
Do you want to be inside me, Audra McDonald?"
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
I did some Tony prediction videos last week because I had a few days of nothing to do and I needed to distract myself from my crippling loneliness.
Sure.
So I did these prediction videos and I did a front runner and an upset for each category because I found this year to be an interesting one where I didn't think there were a lot of sure things.
I agree. Yeah.
It's interesting. Of the 26 categories, 19 of my front runners won and then another 4 of my upsets won. So I overall predicted 23 of the 26 categories. Which
you can't see this right now, but just, I mean, you're aware of this every time you listen to this podcast, but he is furiously masturbating.
Yeah, that light sound you're hearing is me just enjoying my own body and my mind.
I mean, that's very impressive.
Thank you. I was mad because I didn't predict Choir Boy for sound design of a play, which I don't know how anyone could, but it makes sense in the long haul.
Truly. What were you thinking?
What was I thinking? I'm a stupid, stupid bitch. Also, like, I don't know how anyone could have seen Ferryman getting costume design of a play from like a mile away.
I mean, I still haven't seen Ferryman and I know it's amazing, but
it's, so I thought it was great. After having seen everything even though I predicted a lot of the categories, there were some that I was still kind of hoping would happen that didn't happen. Mm. Like at the end of the day, a lot of categories that I was like, you're the front runner, but I don't think you're a sure thing, but they ended up becoming the sure thing.
Yeah.
As good as I thought Ferryman was, I really desperately wanted What the Constitution Means to Me to win Best Play, or even Choir Boy.
I know. If I took one thing away from the Tonys, it's that I'm a dumb dumb for not seeing What the Constitution Means to Me yet, and I cannot wait to see it. Because that actually, her speech and her just, like, getting emotionally raw when, I mean, I'm sure she didn't mean to.
Yeah.
But just that moment, it just made me fall in love with her even more, and I cannot wait to see it.
She's so fantastic. I think she's just a brilliant human being and a phenomenal actress and a great writer.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I cannot wait to see it.
I think you absolutely should. And Choir Boy was fantastic. I was so happy they got to perform and show off Camille A. Brown's amazing choreography.
Yes. And, oh my God, Jeremy Pope.
Jeremy Pope. Just, like, to quote Matt Rogers, break my arm. I would love him to break my arm. I'm thrilled that Andre DeShields won, but I also secretly was hoping that Jeremy Pope could upset because I was like, we got to recognize him in some way for both of these amazing performances.
Yeah.
Yeah, there weren't many winners that upset me. Like, and I mean, I didn't get upset by anything this year because I've kind of stopped taking the Tonys emotionally. I'm not an emotional person overall, but especially with this kind of stuff, I've like just very much stopped it.
Sure.
I mean, I was very happy for Rachel Chafkin to win. I thought she did a very lovely job with Hadestown, and it was like rightfully deserved. I was so I did scream for Ali Stroker when she won. Yes. I was so happy when it happened. I'm so happy we can call Stephanie J. Block a Tony winner. Mm-hmm. I wish that I liked the Cher show. I saw it a week and a half ago, and I am so sorry, gay listeners. I thought it was complete trash. Like, and I love her. And she and the three Chers sound beautiful. Like, they have these amazing voices. When they sing together, it's great. I think the idea behind the Cher show is actually an interesting one.
Sure.
Of having, it's similar to Summer and like the three different Chers, but unlike Summer, the three Chers all interact with each other. So it has a Follies element to it of like remembering your younger self and like seeing your older self and envisioning your older self and interacting with the different elements of your personality and having conflicts of, you know, interest. But they didn't really go for it in a meaningful way, in my opinion. It was a little too... from what I understand, when they were out of town, it was a lot more messy and interesting, and they decided they were going to just clean it up and make it
like
more of
theme,
a
theme park it up.
Yeah, they're like, we have the gays, we have, you know, Bridge and Tunnel Moms, we're just going to like wine it up and camp it up and make it, you know, what they want, which is fine. I mean, the audience seemed to enjoy it, but I would have been much more interested in the messier version. But I also just gravitate towards messier shows.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it, but I will say that, like, her performance seemed wonderful, but...
I thought their Tony performance was also kind of trash.
Well, that's what I was going to say. After seeing the performance, I was like, maybe I don't need no. to see this.
And it's also like what made me kind of disappointed in their Tony win for costume design, because if the their Tony performance is actually very representative of the designs in that show, which is that everything that Bob Mackie designed that's great is stuff that's for Cher, or like things that he is recreating from previous times for Cher.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's new that's like on a featured member or the ensemble is very, very basic and like dollar store Target kind of shit.
Got it.
And that's what made me kind of think I don't want him to win costume design, because like
has he won a Tony before?
No. Okay. So it was also very much a career Tony, because he is a legend and he's done these amazing works in the past.
He looks amazing for 80.
Yeah.
I was
Elaine like, May is 87. Girl. I'm like, people, what are your secrets?
Elaine May also she was one of the highlights for me too.
I was so happy she won. She was devastatingly good in Waverly Gallery. I was very surprised and happy that Boys in the Band won. I was very pleased with that win. I thought it was gonna be Waverly Gallery.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Waverly Gallery. It's done now, right?
Yes.
It was
Boys in the Band, Waverly Gallery, and
Choir Boy.
And Choir Boy and Torch Song are all closed.
Yeah. I wish I had seen it. I didn't.
Well, it's coming to Netflix.
Oh, it is.
Because Ryan Murphy, as you said, anything gay, he's
I wish I had seen Waverly Gallery.
Oh, Waverly Gallery. Well, you can go to Lincoln Center Library and watch it.
I might have to do
it. That's what I did.
Because I would love to see her performance. I've heard it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, because it just doesn't feel like acting. It's to the point where like Joan Allen is acting her face off in a brilliant way, but you watch her next to Elaine May and you're just like, why are you acting? Because Elaine May is so
funny?
Natural. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of humor to it. Yeah. But it's also there's also devastating moments as well.
I just don't even know what it's about. But she looks it looks amazing.
It's sort of like if the Glass Menagerie and Still Alice had a baby. That's the best way I could describe it.
Okay,
because it's a memory play, and Lucas Hedges has a lot of monologues to the audience. But it's also about dementia and family and yada yada.
Oh, same.
Yeah, you know we all have dementia in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Tony performances, the two that I liked the most, I would say, were The Prom.
Yep.
And Choir Boy. Those were the two that I was, like, super into. I rewatched Hadestown this morning because at the time I wasn't a huge fan of it, because that number weight for me, like, just sucker punched me in the theater. Like, it slapped me across the face.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up. Continue. I have thoughts as well.
So I was a little drunk and hazy, and I was also the only person in the room who had seen Hadestown. Mm-hmm. So everyone else in the room, after watching it, they were like, that. They all said, well, that number really fascinated me, but I have no idea what happened. I was like, okay, like, that makes sense. And I said, I can see that, and that's sort of how I felt as well. I think the reason why I was not happy with the performance is because I liked it so much in the theater. Like, there are things about Hadestown that I thought were brilliant and things that I thought were just sort of okay. That was one of those moments that I thought was so stupidly brilliant.
Yes.
So to see it on the Tonys and be kind of muddled in a way upset me, because I was like, this doesn't properly represent how brilliant this number is.
Yeah, I had a very same reaction at first, because actually I will agree with your top two, and I will add Hadestown in there for a top three, because I had a very similar reaction where I was like, when I saw the show, that moment, I agree, that's the moment where you just go, oh fuck. Mm-hmm. It's so awesome. Seeing it live is just one of those amazing theatrical experiences. Mm-hmm. And so to see it on the Tonys, and I don't think it was the fault of anyone. I just think I think the older that I get, and the wiser that I get,
filled with hot air, kids.
And the wiser that I get, I realize that one of the things with the Tonys that we will just always be battling against is just that it's the two medians crashing against each other. Mm-hmm. It's TV and film, but theater, and we're trying to it doesn't always exactly work. And so at first I was like, oh, I don't think it's to anyone's fault. I just think that number, of course, isn't going to seem as amazing in a huge Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
I will also agree that something felt very weird last night in the Tonys, where I became very aware of the fact that I'm sure that whoever is editing and choosing the shots and like calling like mm-hmm. what shoot we're viewing at any moment has no idea how actually theatrical storytelling goes.
Yeah.
And so there were so many moments where things that I felt that should have been focused on weren't, and mm-hmm. we were watching a random shot of something else. And I mean, they might just be winging it. I don't know.
I mean, I'm...
But Sorry.
No, go for it.
But, like, I agree. I just felt that that performance, which is so amazing in the theater, seemed weird. But then in the same respect, I was thinking, because then I kind of got upset for the show in the sense of, oh, you guys kind of prematurely shot your wad and now everyone's going to know it when they're seeing it in the show. But then, because I loved the surprise, I had no idea it was coming when you know.
With during the la, that part, yeah.
And so I, but then I had the same thought of, you know, that's what they did in Wicked for the Wicked Tony performance. Mm. We go to see Wicked to see that green Beltris get catapulted into the air. And is it any less special when we see it in person? No, it's more amazing.
Yeah.
So at first I was kind of, you know, thought, man, I don't know if they should have done that. But then I kind of changed over the more that I thought about it and thought, you know, it is a really magical theatrical moment. This is our chance to show magical theatrical moments to the world and what we can do. And I think even though it wasn't as amazing as, to no fault of its own, it was less thrilling than when you see it in person. But I think then when you go see it in person, you'll go, oh, wow, that was still really thrilling.
Oh, sure. Well, and let me be clear. I rewatched it this morning, and it was better on reflection. And I saw that they were trying to make it work for TV, like certain ways that they staged it in camera angles. Like they have the moment with Ava Noblezada in front of the camera with Reeve Carney behind her, and he's out of focus and she's in focus. Then they take her out of focus and put him in focus all in one shot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's for TV, obviously. And then they did these interesting angles for the muses when they sang the Who Are You? I was like, oh, like that's TV and that's lovely. And I don't mind people maybe being underwhelmed by the numbers, seeing it in the theater and being like, oh, this is great. I feel like people, when you're creating your performance for the Tony Awards, people are now thinking, like, how are we going to sell the show? I think a little further beyond that, which is, like, this is going to be preserved. Like, this number in the future is going to be, like, people who never get to see your show ever will see this Tony performance. Like, that's how they will think of your show. And so do a medley, do a number, whatever, but, like, really think hard about the sliver you're going to show and how you're going to present it, because you do have to think about the two mediums of TV and theater. Our friend Mike Bello, who I watched it with, hi, Mike, he worked on the Donna Summer musical, and he said, and for their Tony performance last year, which was quite nice, because they designed it for cameras, and he said Sergio, who won the Tony last night, and we were all very happy for him.
I get so upset when they don't show all the awards.
But I mean,
understand it. But
you know, they fill up all
that. Choreography is a big one.
And choreography is a big one. I also, I don't know, I think the Tonys have become less about the actual craft and more about, you know, ratings and memeability, which is, like, I get it, you know, everybody wants as many viewers as possible, but the Tonys are never going to be huge. It's always going to be niche, so you might as well just, like, really embrace it. And, like, I don't know, they used to do these montages about lighting design and scenic design to, like, explain the craft behind it, which I would like. You don't have to show them getting the awards still on TV, but, like, I don't know, do a montage of all those awards of, like, how they work and why they're important.
I will say that I noticed this year way more than last year's how many things like that have gone missing and aren't in it anymore. And I don't know why it's taken out, if it's a budget thing or what, but I miss it.
I don't think it's a budget thing. I think they're trying to get viewers, and they're like, well, people don't care about this anymore. And it's like, people don't care about it because you're not showing it and intriguing them about it.
Right.
You teach audiences what to care about by, like, choosing what to show them.
Yeah, I found that odd.
But, yeah. But I was going to say with Sergio, with Summer, Mike was saying how when they rehearsed that number, he, like, forced the cameraman to go to the route that he wanted him to go. He's like, this is how I choreographed it for a camera. This is how I need to do it. And it's just like,
That's what it should be,
yeah. And not everyone does that. Not everyone thinks about that. But I'm using that as an example of, for your Tony performance, it's more than just if it's going to sell tickets. It's more about just entertaining the people in the audience. Like, it is TV. Yes, it's live, but, like, we now live in the age of the internet where, like, this is going to go on YouTube. This is going to go on Instagram, people's Facebook
Grindr
profiles.
Yes,
Grindr is forever. Yeah. Or at least until, you know, we're at least up to our chins in water. But, you know, until then, this is, you know, the slice of your show that's going to get seen more than anything else. So, like, think about it that way. And you can redesign it for cameras for these 4 minutes. It doesn't have to be exactly how it is in the theater. You're selling the impression of the show, not necessarily a replica of your show.
Oh, come and wait for me. I hear the walls repeating, the falling of my feet, and it sounds like drumming, and I'm not alone.
One thing that angered me, and I posted it on Instagram yesterday. I actually spelled the word wrong because I was drunk, so apologies, everybody.
Did you put an apostrophe?
No. Oh. I put a U where there should have been an O.
Favorite? What are you talking about?
The favorite. Oh, Emma Stone. Anyway, the in memoriam section of the Tony Awards. First of all, I would like to make
I agree with you 100% on this.
So we'll talk about this in a quick second.
And that's rare.
It is very rare. I would like to just say, first of all, that I found, with the exception of maybe Hadestown and the prom, I was baffled by a lot of the song choices on the Tonys this year. And
what do you mean? Can You Feel the Love Tonight, a song about two lions fucking? You didn't think that was a good in memoriam song?
Well, Mike thinks that it's because Cynthia Erivo is going to be on the Lion King soundtrack, which makes it actually even worse.
Oh gosh, that's probably true. I mean, she sounded amazing.
She sounded amazing, but like,
weird song choice. Yeah, she sounded amazing.
She did sound amazing, and she looked amazing. And Sarah said how, like, you know, you're sort of celebrating the people that touched you, and which is why, like, we can sort of enjoy her voice during this moment. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. I posted on Instagram yesterday, and I spelled the word memoriam wrong. I put a U where there should have been an O. Apologies. Or maybe an A. I'm not quite sure.
Get out.
You take your eyebrow and you get out. That's a Veep reference, everybody. Anyway, something that used to happen and then it kind of went away for a little bit and it came back this year and it pisses me the fuck off, mm-hmm, is people applauding during the in memoriam section for names that they recognize.
Yeah.
Because I understand that you think you are celebrating the lives of the people who matter to you.
Yep.
You're really just recognizing certain names and then not applauding for other people, and therefore you are saying that their lives and their contributions did not matter.
Yeah, it was really obvious.
Yes,
it came back this year, and yes, you were just it was a little cringe
because they started with Maren Maisie,
which got a big one, you
sure,
know?
But for people like Philip Bosco and Barbara Harris, who are Tony winners, who like committed, yes, so much of their lives to their craft in the theater, to be met with dead silence compared to that infuriated me. And like, not just that, those are like big name examples. There were agents and producers and designers, mm-hmm, and choreographers met with complete silence. There was somebody else. I wish I'd like to go back to look at all the names. There were a couple of names where it was like, that person did so much for like the 50s and 60s, but because they weren't on Instagram this, mm-hmm, the last few years, these people don't know them, and therefore they don't matter. And that just infuriates me. So like, I recognize that we want to celebrate the people that matter to us, and we absolutely can. But this is a moment where we're celebrating a whole bunch of people, some names you maybe don't know.
Yeah.
So just stop fucking clapping and let them just have their moment.
And I think that's also why I'm sure that's why they started bringing live singers onto these things in the hope that, oh, I won't interrupt this live singer,
yeah,
with my applause because there's a performance, you know, yeah, a performance in memoriam,
yeah,
going on during the in memoriam. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I saw that and I was hoping you were going to bring that up because I completely agree. I mean, I know it comes from a place of goodness and kindness, but, you know, it's also that thing of like what people do on social media where there's a tragedy or someone dies and then they're just, all they immediately do is they met them once and got a photo and they're like, yeah, oh my gosh, I met them years ago and, mm-hmm, they were amazing. And it's like, that's very sweet. And like, I understand that this person meant a lot to you, but like sometimes it's hard. It's hard in this generation to not turn everything immediately about you. I have cancer. And sometimes it's so hard to
that just, I'm sorry, buddy. That just came back to like slap me in the groin. You remember what that used to feel like, right, John?
Gosh, I'm numb down there. Numb as a...
Yeah, you're numb there as you are now in your anus.
Numb as you know, it's just complete silence down there, like the Tony committee, to when you bring up the fact that Kevin Spacey hosted 2 years ago. Just sheer silence.
Sheer silence.
I was going to make a joke when you said the people who touched us in memoriam, and I was like, oh, was it about Kevin Spacey? No, I completely agree. I think in those moments, especially we as a community who do feel so much more like a community and love to celebrate our own, it's important to celebrate, but to not, it just diminishes all those other people who gave so much and who... I had that weird moment last night where I had an existential thought of, you know, it would be my goal to be anywhere near high enough in this totem pole to be mentioned on an in memoriam on the Tonys. That's such an honor, but these people worked so hard, and, you know, so many people in this business want to be stars and want the recognition and want that. And, you know, they're given this chance to be, wow, remember the great things someone did for them, and then just met with silence. It's a slap in the
face. Well, so I remember last year when I was at the Tony Awards.
No.
And I felt the same way when nominees were being announced for things. There were so many people in the audience that night that were there for Mean Girls, SpongeBob, or Harry Potter.
Yes.
So all of their applause was like deafening when their nominations were announced. And then anyone from The Band's Visit or My Fair Lady or Three Tall Women, like, were met with like polite but tepid applause.
Well, and those Three Tall Women fans are known for being pretty boisterous, you know.
Yeah, like, exactly. Oh, yeah, I mean, I was the only one who went woo during Three Tall Women,
lifted your shirt.
Everybody just looked at me, just going, "Shut up." But I mean, it was one of those things where I was like, I know that, you know, whatever these shows did for you was important to you in this moment, but like, I don't know, like, there are all these people who are nominated, you know, worked hard to be
really
here,
hard.
And you're telling them that their contribution was not nearly as good as someone else in their categories. And like, I mean, there's already going to be a winner. Like, there's already going to be someone who's announced as a winner. You might as well show the same enthusiasm for everyone in that category. Mm-hmm. You don't have to holler for each person, but like, you know, if you're going to scream for one, scream for all five. I just think that's fair.
Yeah. And that's your motto at orgies as well.
It is. No one's ever invited me to an orgy, John. Like you said, I'm not fun.
Oh, Matt.
I would just sit there.
I didn't mean for you to hear that.
Billy, I'd like to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
So I think that's as much as we want to cover on the Tonys. Yeah, I think that's it.
I think so, too. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. I really want Tina Fey to host one year. I think
she'd be a good host.
I thought James Corner was really fun and really charming.
Yeah, I
but
liked
I also
him.
Just realized halfway through, I just had this moment of, don't we ask way too much of James Corden every day?
Yeah.
I was watching him and he was doing so wonderful and working so hard, and I just my empathy just took over and I was like, I want to give him a break.
Yeah. He deserves a nap. Let him sleep.
I was like, can't we just give him a nap? The poor guy. He just does so much for us. All those karaoke's and the carpools.
I was trying to think if there's like any other moments that truly made me gag. I mean, the Audra Laurelini thing, I was screaming on the couch. I had to get calmed down during that because I know it was fake, but I still just loved that moment. I'm pretty sure I got pregnant. Alex Stroker.
I loved all of the close-ups of I cannot wait to go back and rewatch the Tony Awards opening number today because of how many Beth Lovell close-ups there were. Because let me tell you, Beth Lovell is a stage actress through and through,
she
was mugging for the stage, and that camera was just like right there, and it was brilliant. She is just my idol.
Also, I kept on screaming every time they kept on saying Sutton Foster was going to come on stage, and she didn't. I kept on screaming, "You promised me Sutton!"
They were edging us with Sutton Foster.
They really were.
All evening. I was about to bust.
CVS knew that I have been rewatching Younger in preparation for their season 6.
I need to watch that show. You always talk about
it. I do. I enjoy it.
I'm sure it's great.
In these troubling times, it's just fun to watch.
Yeah.
And it's like there's so much gay stuff and they're like embracing.
Well, is there a lot of gay stuff?
I mean, not like gay
characters. They're like some gender fluid characters. One of Hilary Duff's best friends is a sexually fluid woman, and then Sutton Foster's roommate and best friend is a lesbian artist. And like Michael Urie comes in and out, and he's a gay literary agent.
Yeah, it's Michael Urie.
Yeah, but I also just mean like the energy of the whole show has sort of a Dynasty light vibe about it.
Okay,
and I like it.
Well, yeah, anyway. I was very, yeah, they kept edging us all evening.
So speaking of busting, John's been busting to share some exciting surprises
today. So I cannot believe that you actually almost ruined the surprise a little bit ago with your surprise, because in your surprise, there was a direct reference to my surprise.
What?
So I'm going to take us back to some of our roots right now. Playbill.com. Jobs. Job details. Description. TRT Theatrical Productions is casting two male actors for Arch Enemies, a 10-minute one-act over-the-top comedy about two business corporate men out on a lunch meeting in a private cafe. Don't you love private cafes? Me too. Mm. Synopsis. Same exact thing. When two corporate businessmen discuss a business matter at a private table for two, the outcome is shocking as they discover more about each other's personal lives than the matter at hand. This short comedy piece will be videotaped at a Black Box Theater in New York City for future productions, as well as submissions to film festivals. This, I feel like a personal attack. Preferred actors with some comedy and non-musical theater backgrounds preferred. Rude.
Rude.
Man number one, 25 to 30 years old, can portray a corporate type, clean cut, or some facial hair, so basically anything, toned, commanding presence, a bit arrogant but some sarcastic comedy, must be able to hold a bunch of grapes on a stem hanging from his foot as man number two eats from them lying on the floor. Think of Roman times, is what it says in parentheses afterwards. Man number two, 21 to 26 year old, can portray a corporate type, clean cut, or some facial hair. Once again, you're just saying basically sexy man who's willing. Trimmed to toned, good comedic timing, conniving, you must sure like conniving character, sir. Must be comfortable eating a bunch of grapes hanging from man number one's foot lying on the floor. Parentheses, think of Roman times. The salary is $100, as it normally is, and the auditions were held on Ripley Greer tomorrow. The auditions will be held tomorrow from 2 to 4. If I was not in rehearsals, I would be going to this, because ladies and gentlemen, yes, that's right, the foot fetishist is back, and he wants you to eat grapes from another non-equity actor's toes.
I might want to go to Ripley Greer just to, like, see who goes in for this, if, like, anyone actually submits.
Yeah, so I thought about emailing him. I mean, Robbie Rizal, who
we've had on this
podcast. Had on this podcast before. I actually just thought, I was like, maybe he won't want his name mentioned, but I'm sure he's fine with it. Robbie Rizal sent this to me and was just like, hey, girl, enjoy. And I could not believe it. And so I was doing some digging around about him again, and this play is legit. He did it in a festival, well, quote unquote legit. He did it in a festival a couple months ago, but it's always these postings that I just find so bizarre of like, I need it filmed.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of film festival are you sending it to? Like, there's no information about it.
Well, if it's a play, why are you sending it to a film festival? Are you just like, are you just trying to get like, if we're choosing to believe that this is for real, my only justification I can think of is that like, you're just trying to get the content of the play out in any way, shape or form you can. In that sense, maybe. However, I don't think that's what this is.
Yes. And I also looked up the theatrical company TRT, which is Triangle Rainbow Theatrical Company, and the creator of that is our good did I ever say his name on the podcast out
loud? I don't think you did, but say
I don't
it.
Think
say
I did
it. Say it loud and proud.
His name is, but the thing is, I kind of feel like I'm like dragging him.
I mean, do it.
So basically this man's name is sometimes goes by Tony, sometimes has a different last name.
Wait, Anthony.
And so honestly, I just kind of want to talk to you. If you ever hear this, I do want to talk to you, because I would love to believe that you're not doing what you've been doing for years.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same respect, I see the breakdowns. I see the questions and the weird things. I mean, he seemed to have written a couple of things and directed a couple of things. And if this is an artist that, like, is just really excited about this form, I just wish he would just come out and say it. Like, hey, sure. I'm making a foot fetish play. Let's make a... This comedy is about foot fetishes. And it's not that you're making fun of them. I mean, obviously, like, it's the weird non-transparency of the whole thing. And also just the, like... It's always the same details, and then you never see anything happening else from it. And it's like, where does this stuff go?
Yeah.
Where does the film stuff go?
Well, it's the combination of the fact that these pieces never seem to, like, have a second life in any way, shape, or form. And it's also because the breakdown...
This one is its second life, which I will say.
Okay.
Like, this is... And so that's why I'm more intrigued and more like, girl, like, let's talk about it. Like... I want to, like...
It's the burying of the lead in the breakdown that upsets me. Because, like, if it... Yeah. Like, someone like a Charles Bush or a Taylor Mack that writes things like that... Like, Charles Bush writes plays where men get down to their speedos all the time. Yeah. But it's part of the humor because he's sending up a style of theater or film, what have you. And that's like, the first thing in the breakdown that you see. Like, you know, this play is a satire of this type of... acting or this type of work, so this part is the beefcake part that we are using to satirize this section, so please be comfortable in a speedo. And it feels less creepy because they're upfront about it, like, this is what we're trying to accomplish with this. This is why we need you to be okay with this. Whereas this is just like, this is a fun comedy, but by the way,
and like, his name isn't on the thing anywhere. I did have to, like, go looking for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's also just that thing of like, what are you hiding?
If you don't want your name attached.
What are you hiding? Although, I don't know. I might want you to bleep that out. I'm not sure if I do want his name being on it. I do feel a little
We'll bleep the name then.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. What are you hiding?
Bleep. Yeah, what are you hiding? Bleep. I was going to send an email to, but I'm also done trying to be like... sneaky about it. Like, I just want to, like, I just want, now that, like, that's kind of gone away for a long time. I mean, it's gone away for like 2 years.
Yeah.
God, we've been doing this for 2 years.
It'll be 2 years in July.
When's our anniversary?
I don't know. I'll look it up.
You know.
I know. It's some moment in July. I just remember.
Look at me in the eyes, Matt. You know.
John just looked at me like I was a piece of bacon, and it was very disheartening.
Yeah.
I don't like, I was a piece of bacon, or that I was someone who didn't look and act like me. It's very strange.
Or like I was, or like you were the tall man in
Hadestown. Timothy Hughes. You better believe I know his name. To quote Matt Rogers, I would love for Timothy Hughes to break my arm, but just because I want it, I don't necessarily think it can happen.
That's where you and I differ.
Yeah. Just a sexy man who's willing.
Yeah. Honestly, just someone with a pulse.
Yeah, this has been a lovely little episode.
What a smorgasbord of content.
Yeah. You give me schmore and I am bored.
Yes, true.
There we are.
And I have a ton of gas.
Schmore. Indeed, gas, you do. And you're bored. Schmore, gas, and bored. Yeah, so I think before we find another rabbit hole to dive deep into, which is not a metaphor for your anus, why don't we just wrap this guy up and pick ourselves a Broadway diva?
Yeah, wrap it up, which is not a metaphor for your anus.
Do you wrap up your anus?
Yeah, who does it? A diaphragm? Don't you use diaphragms?
In your anus?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? That's what people do now.
Yeah.
That's what the kids do.
That's prep, right? That's what everyone keeps calling prep? That's prep? Is that prep?
I fucking hate you. Oh my god. Let's take away your right one too. Okay.
Oh, honestly, they should have. They should have just...
You're just so uneven now.
I should be a eunuch. I deserve it. I put the U in eunuch, honey.
Honey.
When he did text me that he had to get a consultation for his surgery, I went, wow, John, you're just going real hard on trying to become Bernadette Peters, aren't you?
I know. I just really wanted to lose 3 pounds.
You should have gotten the right one done too. You really need to lose 6.
I know, girl. Anyways.
Anyway.
Who's a good diva? Have we had Stephanie J. Block?
We haven't. I was going to say either her or Allie Stroker.
Oh.
But I think there are fewer options for Allie. I don't know if... by the time I edit this, I don't know if the
Just
Oklahoma
play them at
album.
The same exact time.
Exactly. We'll do that. How about this? Let's do Stephanie J. Block for today, because the next one that we record, I am positive the Oklahoma cast album will be out, so we can use...
I didn't know it really wasn't out yet.
I don't think it's... I mean... Not that I know of. I couldn't find the full thing on iTunes, but
And I'm sure you looked, I believe.
I did. So let's do Stephanie J. Block, and then the next time we're together, it'll be Ally Stroker.
Brilliant. Great. All right, take us out, SJP.
B. We could also do Sarah Jessica Parker. Why not?
Sarah Jessica Parker doing Shy.
Stephanie J. Block, SJP, take us out. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
I love to hear the music. I love to hear the music. The music. Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.